We're going to invite folks in the audience. If you have a question, I think we're going to hand this microphone off. And while we're doing that, just raise your hand and somebody will get you a microphone. I'm just going to throw another question out for the panel. And this is definitely something you all touched on. The complex nature of family status. You could have in one family one person who has documents, another person who doesn't. It could be siblings. It could be a mother has documents, a father doesn't. One child does, the other doesn't. And what that does to families, and I know Manlock also touched on that, that when you have then one family member is deported, but the constant fear for all families, even the people who have documents, that they're living under because of a cousin, a friend, or a sibling, or a parent doesn't have that. So Arturo, do you want to talk a little bit more about that, how this is just so complex?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, there are, I mean, I'll just talk about some students just because they're very public about this that I'm currently are at CU, and they just, the level of anguish that they are constantly feeling because some of their members in their family are without, you know, without papers. And so it, in fact, one of in the kind of education circles, a really phenomenal study was done, and it was basically determined that most elementary school age children that are Latino in the United States have almost PTSD levels of fear and anxiety about someone in their family being deported. And so back to the school to prison pipeline, part of what we're also seeing in addition to that is that these kids having these fear and anxiety, and of course being kids and not necessarily knowing how to process all these deep feelings, will sometimes act out and get punished, but then having these very unequal systems of punishment for these real, very real feelings of like, oh my God, am I gonna go home and my mom and dad's not gonna be there, or my big brother who I look up to, or my, you know, my sister who I hate, but God, I love her anyway, or whatever, right? And so, you know, all of these fears, right? And so a lot of you know, schools, teachers, and just communities is like, how do we deal with these levels of, you know, kind of anxiety, and how do we not criminalize them is really the kind of deeper issue that I think really needs to you know, to be looked at. So yeah, that's been a huge issue in the educational circles, is how to deal with children who are feeling all of these things, and then how it's kind of treated or dealt with in the school system. So,
maybe when you, there's a question here. When you,
we have a question.
Yeah, it's actually, I'll offer a comment. First of all, just so powerful, each of your stories, and it's a great gift to our community that you would offer this. I mean, I was reflecting as you were telling these stories that in many ways, they're the stories of almost all immigrant populations as they've come to this country and faced discrimination throughout history. But, you know, you probably didn't have this kind of a forum. And in a way, you guys are allowing us a vision into real, you know, real time, the immigrant story of your families and your personal stories. So I so thank you just on behalf of, you know, the audience and myself. But I will say, I ask you this question. It must have been a challenge for you personally to come forward and participate. I just imagine when you were asked, are you interested in telling the story? A, there was probably a legal risk, and B, you know, just personally confronting this and telling it to an audience. So I'd be very interested to know, just from your own personal experience, what was the feeling of telling the story? Was it? Well, I don't want to project. I'd be interested to know, what did you go through personally in your own travels to then come forth and tell the story?
First of all, thanks everyone for being here and, you know, being part of the support. Just to answer your question, there's a little, we tell this story like in past performances that we had. Myself and two brothers of mine, Juan and Oscar, we were at Metro State University, right? So it was our first year. We were going there, everything was going well. Until like we started joining the movement, right, the immigration movement and everything. So we did a interview with the Denver Post, coming out as undocumented students being in Metro State. And so we did the interview the day after, you know, the newspaper came out, and they actually made banners of that picture that they took us. around the school saying, our picture of three brothers saying, if seen, call immigration. And so that was a, like a big thing, right? So for us, it wasn't like that big of a deal because we knew it was people were supporting us, behind us, right? Community, organizing. So we, the school got a lot of threats and a lot of like a lot of complaints about that because we were undocumented, right? How come these people coming here to this school? So we knew, like at least I knew when, during that time, I'm making noise, like people are talking, so I must be doing something right. And so that's how I knew I should keep going with my story, right? And when then we met Kirsten, and she tells us like, hey, we're gonna do this story, and we're gonna tell us everything that we were gonna do. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. I mean, I'm not really sure what I'm gonna get myself into, but I'm in. If it is for the movement, then I'm in. So I wasn't really scared to tell my story. I was just more about, I need a change. Like there's a change that needs to be like happening. And one of the things that I got from Jorge Ramos, a reporter from Univision, is like our parents, when they live their lives, it's a time of sacrifice. My parents, right? They sacrifice their sacrifice for me to have a better life. But now my generation is like the time for a change. So, and that's what I'm trying to do right now. So like I said, I wasn't really scared of telling my story. It just gave me more ganas, more strength to come out and say it.
If anyone else has a question, go ahead, raise your hand all the way over there. Does anybody else want to talk about their own personal experience in this process while we're getting the mic over here? There we go. Kirsten's fast. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for sharing your stories. We really appreciate it. I was wondering, what would you tell people? What would have helped you the most, or what would help people the most when they come here from the community, from society?
Anybody? What advice would you give? What would you have needed from? From society, from the community, when you first arrived as an immigrant? I mean, some of you were babies. So.
I would say understanding, empathy. Not sympathy, but empathy. I think a lot of people tend to forget their history. And as the gentleman remarked, you know, we are kind of... we're post-shadowing, right, what it has already happened. And it's a sad reality that each immigrant introduced into this country, the United States, has to go through a hazing process to become American, right? It's a sad tragedy, but one that we've kept up over the ages. And it's something that I think needs to stop now. We've gone way too far. And, you know, we're in 2016, and the fact that, you know, a presidential candidate is talking about people as if they were discardable, as numbers, as parasites, is disgusting. And we need to shame that kind of speech, hate speech. We need to empathize with the people who need relief, need a helping hand when so many tragic things are happening in the world. You know, we open our arms to refugees, that we understand why people need to migrate. You know, our world is going through so many changes, and we can't survive with these types of ridicule because it's dangerous. It's dangerous for our humanity. It's dangerous for people. The fact that there have been attacks on immigrants ever since Trump has announced his presidency on Hispanics, on Muslim people. Physical attacks is outrageous and grotesque. We need to sit with the reality that you're going to be standing next to, working next to, living next to people who don't look like you or talk like you, right? But we all bleed the same. We all you know, want a better future for our families and our community, and I think we need to move forward with that dialogue. This election is one of the most important, I think, in my life. I have a very real fear that if we elect the wrong president, that that you know, the boogeyman would come to my house and take me away from my family, that I would disappear, and that they would worry about where I am. And that's the reality that we live in, right? When we see the polls go up and down for our presidential candidates, for people in our community, right, our representatives, the reality is, like, I may not have a license next year. I may not be able to walk, I may not be able to work next year. My parents may be at risk of deportation. We may have to hide, you know? Those are the kinds of things, right? And do we really want to live in an America that has that type of rhetoric, that we live in that type of reality where we're reliving stories of the Holocaust, right? These are the fears I have, and I assume a lot of the fears that we all have. This is real for a lot of us, and I think for me the most important thing is that people go out and vote, and that they vote their conscience and really understand why they are voting. I work every day to get people out to vote, and it infuriates me and it shatters me that people would say, you know, I don't care enough. I don't care about politics. I'm not a political person. And it's ridiculous, because they are. Like, these things affect them at the end of the day. And the fact that they're letting a small amount of people filled with hate choose for them is ridiculous. So I think empathy, compassion, and really, like, understanding. Like, they need to understand. People need to understand. You all need to understand how powerful your opinion is and how powerful your words are, and to choose them wisely.
Go ahead.
This is addressed to Anna. I have heard these monologues many, many times, and it strikes me that sometimes when we hear the word deportation, we don't understand the reality behind it. We don't know what happens to people who are deported. Could you talk and tell us what happened with your brother? What happened once he landed back in Mexico? What's happening with him right now?
So when he got arrested, like I said, he got arrested a week after turning 18. And after that, he spent about 3 to 4 months in Boulder County Jail paying his time for the crimes he was charged with and he pleaded guilty to. And then after that, immigration came to get him, ICE. We didn't know where they took him. We were looking for him for days. We didn't know where he was. Finally, we found out he was in a federal prison in Colorado Springs. And when we got to talk to him, he said he was in 24/7 lockdown with people who, you know, who actually were like, that committed crimes like murder and rape and things like that. He was locked with people like that. So when I tried to go see him, well, actually my husband tried to go see him because I wasn't able to, because at that time I'm still undocumented, but now I have DACA. But at that time I wasn't able to go because I was afraid that they would take me in as well. So my husband and I went to go see him so he could go and talk to him. But when we got there, they told us he wasn't there anymore. So we were looking for him again. And again, it was like a couple of days before we found out he was in Aurora at the GEO Center. And that's when all the proceedings like started for him. He would like tell us everything about like life in the immigration center. How unjustly and how unfair they're treated. Not just them, but like people who are you know, the LGBT community, how they're treated. It is horrible. Anyways, after that, he spent like 3 months, two to three months in jail, and like we hired a lawyer to defend him there, but he basically just stole our money. Yeah. He just stole our money, and we couldn't go see him again. The only one that could go see him was my husband, because my mother, my other brother, and me, we didn't have documents. The time came when they told him, like, you're going to get deported. And we were able to take him a bag with clothes and a little bit of money for him to take. But then, again, they didn't tell us when he was going to get deported, when they were going to send him to Mexico, the times he was going to arrive there. They didn't tell us anything. One day, he just was gone from jail, and it was days. And I would call immigration and ask, and they would say, we're not allowed to give you that information. We're not allowed to give you the information. So, yeah, days passed, and we didn't know where he was. Finally, it was like a week after that he called us, and he said he had managed to get, he was dropped off in Juarez, Mexico, and from there he had taken a taxi to the bus, to the bus station, and then from there he had taken a bus to Zacatecas, where my family is from. But again, it was just, it was such a horrible, horrible experience that we went through, that he went through. Like, us over here going crazy, but I cannot imagine what he went through. So, right now, he's in Guadalajara, and he is working, but he suffers from depression, anxiety attacks, panic attacks. So he's still working on it. He's still getting used to, even after it's been 6 years, and he's still not used to the life over there. So, yeah.
Anna, have you seen him since he was arrested that time?
We saw him when he was in the Boulder County Jail, but after they took him from the Boulder County Jail, we haven't seen him or touched him. I mean, we see him on FaceTime. So, yeah.
Well, I really want to thank everybody for hearing this. There are lots more opportunities to hear these monologues again in the community, and I think maybe Mary might come out and talk a little bit more about that. But as we wrap up, I want to just give a huge thank you to all of these amazing people who've stood up to share their stories. And a huge thank you to Motus Theatre and Kirsten Wilson for her tireless work in putting all of this together. There was an envelope in the programmes this evening, and this is only possible due to the thank you to our sponsors, but also to the kindness of members in the community who see the importance of having these stories put out there for everyone to hear. So if you feel so inclined, we would absolutely appreciate your generosity. It will be divided between KGNU and MOTUS. And so, as I said, there are envelopes in there. There's another event happening 8 o'clock. Kirsten, do you want to talk about that?
Playback Theatre West will tell, you can tell them your experience or your family's experience in immigration, and they will act it out. If you've never seen Playback Theatre West, it's free. It's a great opportunity. It's 8 o'clock in the same space. You can go have dinner and come back.
And there's a whole bunch of Indigenous Peoples Day. Yay, Boulder and Denver recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day. So a lot of stuff happening tomorrow, and then a whole bunch of stuff for Modus Theatre as well.
A raffle. There's a raffle. For those of you who filled out thank you for filling out the evaluation forms. They're huge, and if you filled it out and you got a ticket, you can win. And this one is for... Well, on the way out, if you still have one, you can give them the share, and we'll do one more poll. We have to get out of here fast anyway. But the winner is 0505576. 0505576. Sherry will have your prizes out right here, I guess. No.
We'll do a few.
9505581. 9505581.
Four more after this.
9505575. 9505571.
Oh, we got a winner. We have a winner.
Okay, come see me.
And 9505569. Said it?
And tune in Wednesday, October 26th, 8:30 a.m. on KGNU. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, yeah.
8:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 26th. We're going to broadcast the monologues on air. So.
9505572. You can also get the DVD of Do You Know Who I Am outside or postcards.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Nice program.
Thank you so much for coming and supporting.
Driving alone.